Good morning. You can hear me with the mask off. Everybody knows to my right, Melissa DeRosa, Secretary to the Governor. To my left, Gareth Rhodes, Deputy Superintendent for the Department of Financial Services, who's been working with us on this project over the past few days. Today is day 267. Everybody asks me the same question. Where are we and what's going to happen? That's all that people ask me. Where are we? Just to get our bearings. Today is Sunday. We're in New York City. That's in the United States of America. We're 4 days until Thanksgiving, 5 days until Black Friday, 33 days until Christmas, 39 days until Christmas Eve. That's where we are. This is the challenging period. A lot of discussion about COVID. You listen to the talking heads on cable news, you come up with all sorts of different variations of what's going to happen. It's going to be terrible. It's going to be an apocalypse. Another station will say, don't worry about it. It's all going to be fine. What is the problem we're trying to deal with, and what are the consequences? The problem is that this is a dangerous period because you have increased social activity by definition. That's what happens between now and New Year's Eve. There are more parties, people are shopping, students are coming home from college in states with higher infection rates. There are more family gatherings. 37 days between today and January 2nd of significantly increased social activity. That's what's going to happen, right? What do we expect? We expect people will eat more than usual and on average will put on 5 more pounds. Why is that relevant? It's not really relevant. Then why did I put it in there? Because it evidences the social behavior of the season. People put on average of 5 pounds. Why? Because they're eating a lot. Why? Because they're at family gatherings and sitting at the table and visiting, and that is the season. That's what happens. Well, what is going to happen to the COVID rate? I believe the COVID rate will increase, just as I believe most New Yorkers will put on weight. The only question is how much and how fast. And nobody knows, and there are scenarios. You have moderate trajectory, you have a low trajectory that goes up, or you have a terrible spike. Nobody can tell you because nobody knows, because it depends on how we act. How much weight are you going to put on? It depends on how much you eat. That's a silly analogy. No, it's not. It is a function of social behavior during this period. It's up to individuals, and it's up to individual communities. Communities across this state behave very differently than other communities. This state as a whole operates much differently than other states across the country. So it's literally up to you, and it's up to your community. That's what we mean by the microcluster strategy. It's up to you in your community. A microcluster is small. It's your neighborhood. It could be a couple of miles in geography. It is literally your community. The advantage is we get to say to people, beware of your own activity in your own community. We get to target more closely enforcement activities. If we put in economic restrictions, we don't have to restrict everyone. Just because Hollis, Queens has a high infection rate. It's my hometown, I can say it. Doesn't mean all of Queens has to close down just because Hollis, Queens is out of control. And then the microcluster zone increases if the zone increases, right? Three levels of action: yellow zone, orange zone, red zone. Going up with the infection rate. You hit 2.5%. Outside of New York City, it's 3.4%. Why is it lower in New York City? There's more density. You go to a yellow zone. What happens if I'm in a yellow zone? House of worship goes to 50%, mass gatherings 25, indoor dining 4-person max. Schools are open, but you have to do mandatory 20% testing in the school. Up one notch is an orange zone. 3% in New York City, 4.4 to 5 outside of New York City. Orange zone, scale up the restrictions. House of worship goes to 33, mass gatherings go to 10. Businesses, we close the high-risk non-essential, such as gyms, personal care. Dining for people, outdoor only. Schools must go to remote, no in-person, with a test-out option. What does that mean? It means the school closes for a couple of days. You clean the school. The school can either go remote or the school can test the students and reopen. Okay? You go to a red zone, that's our highest zone, red zone, 4%, houses of worship to 25, mass gatherings prohibited, business essential only, dining takeout only, schools remote, again with a test out option. So even in a red zone, the school isn't closed. The school can be open, but you have to test the students and make sure that they are negative. Those are the three levels of zones. You get beyond 4%, you're in a different arena altogether, and you're in serious territory. Up to 3%, which makes the state orange zone, school districts control what they do with their local schools. Why? Historically, education is controlled locally. Local school district, local superintendent, they have local elections for the school board. Localities are very proprietary about their control of their school. New York City, you have mayoral control. The mayor is basically in control of the schools. What the law says is up to 3%, local governments, you're in charge. Do whatever you want to do. Remote, hybrid, whatever your parents agree to, you can do. At 3%, state law governs because you're going to an orange zone. Okay? Is that clear? So they have local control up to 3%. And you have local, you have 700 school districts across the state. You have a whole variety of options. Some are in person, some are remote. But at 3%, local control goes away, state law governs, and you go to an open orange zone. The school has to be cleaned. You have to do additional testing. And you can reopen the school if the positivity rate is low. All right? As you can see, we want schools open. All the leading experts say keep K-8 open. The positivity rate in the schools is lower than the positivity rate in the surrounding community. It's safer for the child to be in the school than in the community. Not to mention the child's getting an education, parents, etc. So we want to keep schools open. Junior high and high is a different story. There, the students are less responsible, and there's generally a higher infection rate. Now, I want to just clear up a little confusion. 3%. When is 3% not 3%? Because nothing is easy. 3%, the way the state determines 3%, is it's an average over the past 7 days, because day to day the number bounces like a basketball going down the court, right? It's 2-4, 3-1. So it's a 7-day average, and then that number has to hold constant for 10 days, all right? We don't want zones going in and going out. So we want to make sure they're based on solid data. So it's a rolling average, and then the zone has to stay at that number for 10 days. Local governments across the state publish their own numbers. How does this happen? The state collects all the testing data, and then we send it to the local governments. Some local governments change factors and will have a slightly different number than the state. I believe it's confusing and unnecessary, but it is also irrelevant because the state law governs. And once the state says it hits 3% or 4%, that's what matters. But when people say, well, my county says this, my mayor says this, we do all the testing. We send them the numbers. Sometimes they change what tests count because of timing. Sometimes they change. They don't remove duplicate positive cases. So there'll be some fluctuations. It's confusing, but it's also irrelevant. Is 3% safe? 3% is the safest margin being used in the United States of America. 3% gives us a margin of error that if we hit 3, we have time to correct before the situation gets out of control. And remember, the 3 is a real 3, which will then designate a microcluster. And then we work with that microcluster to reduce the number. How safe is 3? It is so safe that 46 states are now above 3%. If 3% was a national standard, 46 states would be a zone. Isn't that amazing? It's because New York State's overall infection rate is so low. We have the fourth lowest infection rate in the United States of America. God bless New Yorkers. The only states with a lower infection rate, Vermont, Hawaii, and Maine. Beautiful states, all of them. But, not really but, and more rural than New York, lower density than New York, doesn't have the big cities of New York. So Vermont, Hawaii, Maine, and then New York. Every other state is higher. 3% is right above New York. Massachusetts, 3.2. That's how safe 3% is. And look at how high these numbers are going in the country. Wyoming is at 51%. We're talking about 3%. Wyoming's at 51. South Dakota, 46. Iowa, 45. I mean, it's amazing what's going on in this country. And it's amazing how good a job New Yorkers are doing at keeping the rate down. Context is important. What people should be asking now is, what is my community's infection rate? Not What is the state rate? Because it's different across the state. What is my community's infection rate? Because it's your community that's going to determine if you go into a yellow, orange, or red zone, right? Highest rates we have are Western New York, 6%. Lowest is the North Country, 1.3. But look at that variance. Finger Lakes, 2.5. Mohawk Valley, 2.1. Central New York, 2.6. Southern Tier, 1.5. You see all across the state the variance. You see by community the variance. Tonawanda, 6.8. Orchard Park, 6.9. West Seneca, 8%. Lancaster, 9%. That must be the highest in the state, Lancaster.
Yes.
9%. So it's not where what's the state infection rate. It's not even what's my regional infection rate. What is your community's infection rate? Look at the difference even on Long Island. You go from Massapequa, 3.6, Freeport's 4.5. New Rochelle, 5.4. Portchester, Westchester, 6.4. Look within New York City. If you're in Fort Manor, 3.9. You have parts of Staten Island, 5.6. Sheepshead Bay, 2.9. Bensonhurst, 3.2. Where's Queens? Queens boy always looks for Queens. Elmhurst, 4. Corona, 4. Woodside, 3.3. So you see the variance? Even within New York City. How high will the infection rate go? I don't know. But there's going to be 2 points of, I believe, increase. We don't know how significant. December 1, December 10, you'll start to see the results of what happened over the Thanksgiving weekend, right? People get infected. You need an incubation period for the virus. They then start to get sick. They then start to show up at the hospital. So December 1, December 10, you'll see the results of Thanksgiving weekend. After Thanksgiving, you go into that period of hyper-social activity. I think after New Year's Eve, January 2nd, January 10th, January 15th, then you'll see the collective impact of all 37 days, right? After New Year's Eve, everything slows down a little bit. New Year's Day, everybody has a little bit of a hangover. They go home, they go to sleep. Hopefully, the infection rate starts. I didn't mean that you personally have a hangover, I'm just saying, generally. But if you ask me, when are we out of the woods here, this increased activity period, you'll know where you are January 10, January 15. So what if the rate goes up? So what? Everybody's talking about the rate going up. Let it go up. The rate goes up. There are more restrictions to slow the economy. That's bad for business. Rates go up, you overburden the hospital system. You overburden doctors, nurses. You can have possible equipment supplies. Numbers go up, people die. People die. Period. It is a mathematical equation. More people will die the more the rate goes up. Unless you are extraordinarily casual about human life, it matters. It matters. Even if you say, I don't care what happens to the economy, close everything. I don't care about the hospitals. People will die. And that's a fact. Best I can do, warn people, and then show them the scale every day. Show you your numbers every day in your community. Because you can change what you do, and you can change how your community acts. an aside. People say, oh, don't worry, there's a vaccine. I understand there's going to be a vaccine. What difference does it make? The vaccine's coming. The vaccine is starting to come December, January, depending on who you believe. It will be for first high-need populations, nursing homes, etc. I will wager you dollars to donuts, it's 6 months at a minimum before you hit critical mass with the vaccine. You can't take 6 months of unrestricted increase. The numbers for today, the microcluster zones, 4.3. Statewide with the microcluster zones, statewide without the microclusters, 2.2. Statewide with the microclusters, 2.7. 196,000 tests, 30 deaths, 2,562 hospitalizations, 500 ICU, 234 intubations. 30 people passed away. There are no thoughts and prayers. That's the only number on that chart that really means anything to me. We have several communities that are in the warning track. I hate sports analogies for those people who don't know them. Warning track is the track just before the fence when you're running to catch the ball and it's going to be a home run. Warning track turns into dirt so you don't run into the wall. I always ran into the wall anyway. Parts of Staten Island will go into an orange zone. Parts of Staten Island will go into a red zone. At the current rate, Staten Island is a serious problem. Staten Island is also a problem in terms of overburdening hospitals. And we're running into a hospital capacity issue on Staten Island that we have to be dealing with over these next few days. Parts of the city of Syracuse will go into an orange zone at this rate. Parts of the city of Rochester will go into an orange zone. Upper Manhattan will go into a yellow zone. Parts of Nassau will go into a yellow zone. Parts of Suffolk will go into a yellow zone. How much weight will I put on over the holidays? How high will the infection rate go? Depends on what we do. You have a trajectory where it goes so high, the whole scale changes. You know, we're now down there as the fourth state at 3. You see those other states, 20, 30, 40. You could see our whole scale change by the time this is over. I would not be shocked if they said on January 10th, January 15th, we're up at 7, 8, 9, 10%. That could very easily happen if we are irresponsible. It could even be higher if we're irresponsible. It's purely a function of what we do. Questions?
So on Staten Island and in Upper Manhattan, you're saying they will go into different zones this week, or you're saying it looks like they're going to enter those zones?
Right now, by the numbers, remember our numbers, we don't use day-to-day numbers because they bounce. So we use a seven-day average, and then once you hit that seven-day average, the number stays constant for 10 days. Unless they dramatically change the trajectory of the infection rate, this week they will go into those zones. Does that make sense?
When it comes to the discrepancy with the city numbers, why is it better, in the state's opinion, to report that data based on when the test results come in as opposed to the city's method as of when the tests are taken?
Well, the real difference with the city's numbers is that, first of all, the city's number is legally irrelevant, right? So I think it just causes more confusion because it's the state's number that determines any action. The only relevance of the city's number is what they do below 3. But once it hits 3 on the state number, the city is irrelevant, right? I understand the main difference in the testing, and this gets into the weeds because different scientists have different methods. The city counts duplicate positives, meaning if you go and get a test today and you test positive, and then you go home for 2 or 3 days and you think, I think I'm over this, and you go for a second test, they count that as 2 positives. We count that as 1 positive because it's...
Are you saying the antigen test? Because the antigen...
No.
Okay.
The full test.
For all tests.
All tests.
For all tests.
But the state is also counting antigen test data, and the city is not, right? And what is the epidemiological...
I don't know. Do you know?
So there's 3 basic differences between how the state does this and how the city does this. And there's all... You can talk to many different public health experts who will give you the advantages, disadvantages of each different kind. The first is, Clayton, as you mentioned, the specimen collection date versus the reporting date. If you look at, when you do it on the 7-day average for both the city and the state, there's very little difference if you look at it on the averages, especially if you go back, let's say, a week, because those numbers balance out over time. So that really shouldn't result in much difference. The advantage to how the state does it is that if our number is 2.7% today, that number is 2.7% today a month from now, 2 days from now, a week from now. We don't backfill any numbers. So there's advantages and disadvantages to both sides. Antigen testing, any test that is licensed by the FDA or the New York State Department of Health to detect the current infection, if it's an antigen test, PCR test, we would count that because if you tested positive on an antigen test, you would be required to quarantine. Now, many people who might test positive on an antigen test per Department of Health guidance, we put out extensive guidance about how to read these results, might seek a confirmatory PCR test. If you test positive on both, we would only count one of those. So this, if you look at the, you know, if you solely look at antigen testing, is that making the numbers different? Not really, because the antigen testing numbers and the PCR testing numbers alone aren't that different. As the governor said, what we believe is the discrepancy here is really that we don't include that duplicate positive, and the city does in their numbers.
Yeah, I mean, along those lines, we're now seeing very long lines at CityMD and other private clinics. We know in the worst of this, we had a big backup with the national labs. Are you seeing that same kind of backup, and is that having any effect on the data right now?
So in terms of the 2 different questions, one is the wait times at testing sites, and the second is the lag times at labs. The lag times we are tracking have not increased at all, really, amongst the larger labs and the smaller labs. We have a network of hundreds of labs in the state that are operating on 1 to 2 day turnaround times. We still have 85 to 90% of our results coming back within 72 hours, which is very good. In terms of the wait times, we have multiple state-run sites in the city that are just collection sites that are running under capacity. There's, I know, reports of H&H sites that have plenty of capacity. I know there is a preference among many to go to the urgent care clinics where you can get your results immediately and that are might be more convenient. We have sites that are coming back to us and saying we have excess capacity here to do more testing. And we've also been trying to get more rapid testing and more testing supplies to some of these urgent care clinics so they can meet some of that demand.
Yeah, let me just follow up on how you count, what tests you count, what tests you don't count. If you don't count antigen tests, you leave out hundreds of thousands of tests, right? We do all the nursing home workers. We do hundreds of thousands of antigen tests per week. So you would significantly reduce the database. And the antigen test gets you the results faster, so you have a better idea of where you're going. But my basic point is, yeah, you can have scientists argue this all day long. Why confuse people since the New York City number is irrelevant? It's irrelevant. It doesn't determine if a school opens. It doesn't, unless up to 3. It doesn't determine whether a restaurant or a bar opens or a church opens or a synagogue opens. It is irrelevant. So why confuse people? And I said that with the other elected officials across the state. My Department of Health wants to count this. All right. But your number is irrelevant. So it's just confusing.
But it does appear to be relevant in this case because the 3% threshold, according to the city's data, was the justification for closing schools last week.
That's all up to them. Yes, but they could say 3, but by the way, it's now 4, or it's 5, or it's 6, or I decided not to do it, or I got new data, or I turned on the TV, and every leading expert said it's better to keep the schools open, right? That's all in their control. The only thing what's not in their control is when they hit 3, their control is gone and it becomes an orange zone. On the testing, people have to understand this. We have 420 sites in New York City. Some sites are being overrun and some sites are being underused. I don't know why. I don't know what makes some sites more popular than other sites, but I tell my people, we have 420 Dunkin' Donuts in New York City. Some Dunkin' Donuts have a line going out the door. Some Dunkin' Donuts, you can walk right up to the counter. Look at the availability of the 420. They will tell you how long the wait is. We need to better distribute the volume over all the testing sites. I don't know why people, prefer the urgent cares?
Many of these urgent care clinics give you instant results within 15 minutes, half an hour. They do them on spots, point of care test, often antigen. It doesn't go out to the lab. So many people, especially with this Thanksgiving travel coming up, are seeking results that they can get back within 15, 20 minutes. What I'd urge them is that even if your test is sent out, to a lab, you're still getting it back the vast majority within 48 hours or 72 hours. And so seeking out these other sites makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's nice to know quickly. But then again, the antigen test in New York City wouldn't even count. Yes?
On schools, if New York City hits 3% for 10 straight days by the state's numbers, theoretically that would mean schools would reopen under a yellow zone. Is that
yes.
Correct?
So Can reopen.
How do you anticipate someone like Mike Mulger, UFT, seeing that, saying our numbers go up and schools reopen? That doesn't seem to mesh.
That is the law. And Mr. Mulger knows the law. And the law is the law. And by the way, we just did this. We did. Brooklyn was a red zone and Queens, right? 2 weeks ago. So we did this. It hit 3%. The schools closed. The schools could reopen, clean the school, test the student population. Many of the schools reopened. Some didn't, some did. But you can reopen the school because the school is safer than the local community. I mean, think about it. You have 3% infection rate in the community. The school is under 0.5%. Why would you want the child to go to stay at home, which means they're not going to stay at home. It means they're going to go outside. They're going to run around in a 3% community, right? Not being educated, have them go to the school where the positivity rate is 0.5.
So if you could have, theoretically, you could have kept the schools open here. They're closed now through Thanksgiving and however many weeks longer than that. And the track right now would show that they would reopen once the numbers go up again. So why have parents go through this back and forth?
Because the local government controls schools and always has, and they're very proprietary about it. People buy houses, not so much in New York City, a little bit. People buy homes based on school districts in this state. When you go to buy a house in Westchester County, they don't say, I want to live in Mount Kisco. They say, I want to live in the Chappaqua School District. You know, that local control is really a fundamental premise of our entire system. I was being aggressive saying you can have local control, but only up to 3%. Because 3%, things get serious. So you have control up to the 3. But when we hit 3, then the state law is going to govern, period. Now, you have school districts all across the state. You have 700. They're all doing different things. Some are open, some are closed, some are remote, some are hybrid. If they hit three, then the state law governs, and that is uniform across the state. I thought that was a fair compromise because it honored local control. But when it became a public health issue, which is 3% in our opinion, then the state law governs.
Governor, I got a question on Gateway Pumps.
Yeah, let me just make sure. Anyone else?
Yeah, yeah. Governor. So the state has spent $40 million on
have to be
rent relief.
There. Hold on, let's do this again. Let's do it again. Just give me a second. Anybody else?
Yes.
Oh,
Governor.
There you go. Go
ahead. Speaking of individual communities, we've just seen that a few weeks ago there was a very secret Hasidic wedding where 7,000 to 10,000 people attended, completely maskless. And I'm just wondering your reaction to this. Will there be consequences? And what's to stop this from happening over the holidays?
That, you know, if that happened, I heard the report. If that happened, it was a blatant disregard of the law. It's illegal. It was also disrespectful to the people of New York. The law protects everybody. It protects you, but it also protects me. We went through this with weddings. We literally stopped the wedding a couple of nights before, which was going to be a very large wedding. If it turns out that because we stopped that wedding, the reaction was, well, we'll have a secret wedding, that would be really shocking. And totally, I think, deceitful of the conversations that I had, because I had personal conversations with members of the community. But put that aside, I've been deceived many times. It's illegal, and the city should do a robust investigation. If 7,000 people went to a wedding, you can figure that out, right? That's the problem with the secret 7,000. It's hard to keep a secret. You know, they say the only way to keep a secret? Tell no one. That's the only way to keep a secret. 7,000 people were there. It's going to be hard to keep that a secret. And the city, it's my information, the city is investigating. They should investigate. And if 7,000 people are at a wedding, I'm sure they'll be able to figure it out. And then they'll be, we'll bring the full consequence of legal action to bear.
The state has spent $40 million on a rent relief program, and legislation was from the CARES Act, and legislation was written with the intention to spend the full $100 million in New York. I'm wondering if the state is going to alter the program in any way to get the rest of that $60 million out to renters, and are you considering widening any eviction protections now that cases are rising again?
That is such a specific question that I will bet you even Melissa doesn't know the answer. What do you want to bet? You want to bet for or against Melissa? I do not know the answer. What do you want to bet? What's the over-under on whether Melissa knows the answer?
I think that Melissa knows the answer.
Okay, you say Melissa knows the answer. Go ahead.
So the legislature set the parameters of that $100 million fund, and we've paid out $40 million, as you noted, that are based on those parameters. So those parameters were set in statute, and every applicant that has put in an application that have met those parameters, the money has gone out the door. We're not sitting on the money. We want the money to go out to people who need it most. We are going to reevaluate what the parameters are that the legislature put into law to see if there's anything we can do to get more money out to the people who need it. On the Safe Harbor Act, again, that was something that was passed in legislation, and that means that rent evictions cannot go forward during the pendency of the crisis. So if you have a COVID-related issue with being able to pay your rent during the pendency of the crisis, that stays in effect. The governor has continually extended the commercial rent eviction, and that's something we continue to monitor on an ongoing basis because we understand the plight of business owners.
And just on the rent relief, though, how could I understand the legislature set those parameters, which has resulted in $40 million being spent, but could you as the governor issue an executive order to alter it to get the money out? And would that happen in the next month or so? Is that possible?
It's something that we're looking at and we're consulting with the legislative leaders on, but no money will be returned to the federal government. We will spend all of that money.
Did you have a question? No? Okay.
Governor, the Gateway Tunnels, you tweeted the other day that you want the Gateway to Commission to release the London Bridge Association or London Bridge Associates report on whether they can fix the current North Hudson tubes in place. Isn't that you just talking to yourself? Steve Cohen runs it. New Jersey doesn't even have appointees yet on the commission. Can't you just get Steve Cohen to release the report? And two, if that report does find that you can fix the tunnels in place like the L train, would that require a new EIS to be conducted, or at least the current one to be reformed, because that entire project is based on you can't fix the tunnels until you have the new ones?
I do take particular pleasure in hearing you endorse the now accepted L train repair methodology. Well, you speak about it now, the proven L train technology, the well documented success story of the L train rehabilitation. I'm just kidding. Not really. Look, my only point is there's a question of rehabilitating these tunnels so they're safe. As you remember, I've gone through these tunnels. I took video of these tunnels. I sent the video to the president trying to encourage him because he owns them. Amtrak owns them. President owns Amtrak. It's their tunnels. To repair the tunnels. These are the tunnels that go into the Hudson. And they have done nothing. We have a report that says they can be rehabilitated. I haven't seen the report. There's also a desire by Amtrak and many people to build new tunnels, to have additional access to New York, which I think is a good idea. But one is not the enemy of the other. I don't control the Gateway Corporation. Steve Cohen is my appointee. But Amtrak and New Jersey are the other two partners, and I don't have absolute control. If I had absolute control, I would give you the report tomorrow. I don't have absolute control.
What does Steve Cohen say?
Steve Cohen says, I told Steve Cohen to release the report. He said, fine. He said the other parties are not yet prepared to release the report.
That's it.
2-1 wins in almost everything.
Well, New Jersey doesn't even have their appointees on the board.
Well, that doesn't mean New Jersey, just because you don't have an appointee, doesn't mean you give up your voice, right?
Usually doesn't.
No.
I have another transportation.
You call up the governor of New Jersey or the secretary of to the governor of New Jersey or the transportation person, and you say to New Jersey, just because you don't have an appointee, I'm not going to be totally non-collegial and disrespectful.
I have another transportation question. The Port Authority released their doomsday budget for next year on Thursday. They're cutting capital spending across the board except work that's already underway, and the only other exception is a $2 billion air train. Given the crunch that the Port Authority is seeing, is it still prudent to move forward with this very expensive project?
The completing LaGuardia is essential, in my opinion, for New York City. It'll be the single greatest economic boost that has been done in generations. And with all this bad news surrounding us and all these tales of possible catastrophe, to have the first airport that's opened in 25 years open in New York City is going to be a very big deal. And the air train is part of that. As far as the doomsday budget, if we don't get federal aid, everybody has a doomsday budget. Port Authority, MTA, New York City, New York State, and by the way, every state in the United States. That's why it's madness for them not to provide state and local funding. Madness. Happy Sunday.
You said you expected to be meeting New Yorkers within 6 months. That was the timeline you gave. Could you talk a bit about the coordination with the city on how that rollout is going to look?
Yeah, the state is coordinating with all the local governments. But I said 6 months. I bet, my wager, my best estimate, 6 months at a minimum before you hit critical mass, healthcare employees will get it, senior citizens will get it, people with immune compromise will get it, but critical mass to where it starts to have an impact on community spread, I'll bet you it's at least 6 months. Think of it this way. We did 12 million COVID tests to date over 8 months, moving heaven and earth, every hospital, every clinic, everyone we knew. 12 million COVID tests over 8 months, antigen test, very fast. We have to do 20 million vaccinations. It took you 8 months to do 12 million COVID tests. How long does it take you to do 20 million vaccinations? Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Happy Thanksgiving.